Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. When you're having trouble sleeping, does it ever occur to you that it might be related to the chemicals in your bed? California and other states have laws requiring bed and furniture manufacturers to treat their products with flame retardants. This, of course, isn't even the only problem. Synthetic polyurethane used in mattresses, pillows, couches, and chairs is made from a long list of potentially dangerous and carcinogenic chemicals, and if it does burn, it's incredibly toxic. What's a body to do? Well, there are alternatives, but they're harder to find. The first step is to know what's in your furnishings, and that's harder still. Manufacturers don't usually disclose what's in their products, and if pushed, they sometimes make vague and misleading claims about how their products exceed current regulations for eco-friendliness. They go as far as saying they are sustainable and green, but what does that mean exactly? Usually not that their products are non-toxic and free of chemicals. Many companies actually go as far as lying or giving misleading information that sounds reassuring. Today we're joined by Mike Lavin, L-A-V-I-N, a pioneer in the non-toxic furnishings field who has stood up to the standards and won. Stay tuned to hear how. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, Ph.D.
Thank you, Lena. I was alarmed to learn that honeybees are disappearing. The phenomenon has been labeled colony collapse disorder. It started late last year with beekeepers finding hives without adult bees. It seems to have spread throughout North America and is now being seen in Europe. Organic beekeepers aren't experiencing colony collapse disorder, leading many to think that exposure to pesticides and GMO crops have disrupted bee metabolism. Another line of thought is that cell phone antennas and similar sources of microwave radiation are disrupting bee navigation. A research team at Penn State is looking into these and other possible causes. More than the supply of honey is affected. As pollinators, honeybees affect a wide range of plants, some commercial, some not. I was also alarmed to learn that songbird populations have been on the decline for the last four decades, their numbers cut by half. Climate change, habitat destruction, and pesticides are implicated here as well. As pollinators and seed carriers, songbirds have a significant effect on biodiversity. A recent New York Times article on the 100-year anniversary of Rachel Carson's birth complained about her work and the movement it is credited with spawning. The title of the article was, quote, "Fateful Voice of a Generation Still Drowns Out Real Science," end quote. The gist of the article is that Rachel Carson's work and the subsequent work it inspired have blown way out of proportion the impact of chemicals manufactured and used by humans. This is a familiar voice, one that says, we have science, while you thwart us with unscientific ideology. This is a very narrow conception of science. It's a kind of psychological projection in which an ideology of science insulates its believers from contrary evidence. Public health officials tell us that we're in the clutches of an obesity and diabetes epidemic. An ideology has developed around this issue, too, that focuses on bad diets and lack of exercise, framed as lifestyle choices, or less charitably, as gluttony and sloth. However, a recent study points to exposure to persistent organic pollutants, such as pesticides, as substantially increasing the risk of insulin resistance, obesity, and diabetes. Hardly a lifestyle choice. We have joined the honeybees and the songbirds. Of course, we've never really been separated, as Rachel Carson taught us, and as we continue to be reminded by scientists and citizens who pay attention to the evidence, people more concerned with our capacity to thrive than with devotion to an ideology of science. A copy of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, a writer, and a health educator who produces this show with me and is editor of the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to Big Bucks Medicine. You can find more information about Jeffrey on our website at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Now to furniture toxins. And my guest, Mike Lavin, L-A-V-I-N, is the owner of European Sleepworks with his wife. He's been designing and building mattresses in Berkeley since 1970. In the late 1980s, he observed a connection between flame retardants and polyurethane in mattresses and allergic reactions. For the last 15 years, his products have been made of 100% natural latex and wool. He also designs furniture that is non-toxic and sustainable, and we're very, very pleased to have you with us today, Mike Lavin.
Hi.
Most people listening to this show know that flame retardants aren't good for them. However, it's very hard to find products without them. Manufacturers claim that they can't sell products without them. I'd like you to explain what you did to make it possible to sell your products without using flame retardants.
We went outside of the United States and brought in 100% natural latex. In European countries, particularly Sweden and others, the flame retardants haven't existed for many, many, many years, have been banned, and there are definitely alternatives to the cruder fire retardants. And then we were able to, we found a German company that by compressing wool very tightly and using, as it turns out, organic cotton, we were able to pass the fire retardancy test so that by using natural materials, we had a higher point of ignition.
Yeah, this
as opposed to petrochemicals.
This is what's so funny and interesting about this story is that what you actually did instead of, you know, the other companies say, oh, no, 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 we can't do that. It's illegal for us not to use the retardants and various things. What you did was you said, okay, go ahead, test our products to see if they're flammable. And because you're using wool, which is a flame retardant, they aren't. So you just went ahead and created a natural product, which in fact doesn't burst into flame and produce toxic fumes. It's just, I love it. You know, it's like, it's such a non-brainer, you know, no-brainer, and yet nobody's thinking this way at all except you. Do you feel comfortable talking a little bit about these flame retardants? I mean, I did a little research. I can talk about them if you want me to do it.
It would depend.
I would not
claim to be a chemist.
No, I understand. Let me give people a little bit of a thing, and then Jeffrey can fill in if he wants to. The main products are called PBDEs, and they're a group of they're called brominated fire retardants, and this is distinct from sometimes people hear things about borates and boric acid and borates, which are, you know, mined minerals, which are not toxic unless you eat a bunch of them. But this is something else. Bromines are like chlorine, are very highly reactive.
Halogens, all those halogenated hydrocarbons.
Did you want to say more, Jeffrey?
Not other than as a general class of chemicals, halogenated hydrocarbons tend to be toxic.
They're showing up in human breast milk and fatty tissues of Arctic animals. There's animal studies that show it affects. They're endocrine disruptors, so they're knocking out people's thyroids, which would explain a lot since everybody's thyroids are screwed up. And they also disrupt the brains of developing fetuses by disrupting thyroid. So there's been an industry-wide move to phase them out, although they continue to be around. There are two varieties, Penta and Oxa BDEs, which pose the most likely health risk. And they're made by a single company called Great Lakes Chemical, which has, this is according to an article that I got from the National Geographic Green Guide, said that they've agreed to stop production for the U.S. market by 2005. This is 2007. I haven't noticed that they're not making these. And as you pointed out, Mike, one of the problems with this is that the retardants escape from foam cushions, like in couches and beds and pillows and all this sort of stuff, as household dust.
Essentially what happens is it becomes in the cells of the foams. And then, but it is not bound to the foam, so that as you move the cushions up and down in fairly rapid time, or the fire retardants work their way out of the foams and into the environment. And that's why you see such high concentrations in the last 20 years.
One of the things that's disturbing about them also is that children are being exposed to them, and you have been noticing, you and I talked about how using childhood asthma as a model for knowing that something is wrong, it's a pretty good first warning sign, you know, along with the canaries dropping in the cages, the children start to get asthma. And you've been very concerned about both the synthetic foam products, which break down very readily and start outgassing. They can, in other words, they don't. Usually, you've got two problems. We've got the flame retardants, and we've got synthetic foam. And the foam, polyurethane, is used in a variety of different applications. But when polyurethane is used in cushions and mattresses, because it's being you're moving around on them and you're squishing it and stuff, it keeps breaking down and releasing stuff, doesn't it?
The likely culprit, let's see if I'm pronouncing right, the isocyanates, which are a catalyst or part of it, and they exist apparently both in the polyesters and the polyurethanes. Constantly, and as when I shipped you numbers of studies, children have higher levels of asthma when exposed to either polyesters or polyurethanes. So there is both a new outgassing and an ongoing outgassing. Probably much of it occurs when the products are quite new. Whatever that means, but something that's really old probably less, something really new a lot more.
I'm wondering if the outgassing, and then you mentioned at the beginning that the dust, the pulverization of these materials. I know that there is a recent Swedish study having to do with vinyl flooring and asthma in children that connected it to phthalates, which are particulate, end up as particulates because of the abrasion on the floors, and that the researchers linked that. Is that also a potential problem? I don't mean the phthalates. I mean the breakdown of these polyurethanes and polyesters into the dust particles, and then they become they end up settling, and children are going to be more exposed to those things. Is that part of the picture here, or we just don't know?
I haven't seen a study that I have read that connected house dust, just the basic breakdown. But there was one surprising study that showed even wool showing up as house dust could produce allergic reactions. So from my research, the components of house dust are poorly researched or not readily available from our perspective, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Well, people are allergic to natural substances. Some people, people who are allergic to, who think they're allergic to latex, I believe, are allergic to synthetic latex, because there are plastics that are used instead of latex, but there's also synthetic latex. And I think that the gloves that are used, that are made out of latex, that some people think they're allergic to, may be a synthetic latex. I don't know if that's getting off the topic a little bit, but there is a synthetic latex as well as this stuff that comes right out of the tree.
Well, there's one more that goes into that very importantly, is expensively you can wash latex. And when it goes through this giant washing machine and then squeezed and then dried, much, if not all, of the chemical residual components from creating the rubber are washed out. And it is, again, something that is demanded at the higher levels in Europe and virtually unknown in the United States. I mean, whether latex is washed or not doesn't show up in consumer literature.
Well, nothing shows up in consumer literature. Nothing, as I mentioned at the top of the show, and you and I talked about this. But going back to the other thing is that some people are allergic to wool, too. But I've noticed that people tend to be allergic to wool if it's directly in contact with their skin. And I think it's primarily the oil, the lanolin, that people react to. because I've noted that people who have wool toppers on their beds or wool toppers on their mattresses tend not, or even natural latex, don't tend to react. I mean, you've got lots of people coming and buying stuff from you that are not reacting to your products, who are sensitive, even sensitive to natural substances. So as you say, there are production secrets here too that American companies are not bothering to do.
The lanolin is an expense to remove, and then there are chemicals that remove the lanolin.
So
much of the, for a lot of people, it's a contact allergy. If you look at a wool under a microscope, it looks like a torture instrument, and so those little burrs will cause an irritation. But there's definitely a series of steps that need to be taken to take raw wool with all that coated lanolin and then turn it into a usable clean product. The German company that we use, for instance, uses basically baking soda and
yes.
washes the wool three times, and that removes the lanolin.
Baking
there are
soda.
All kinds of ways to remove lanolin.
Baking soda also reduces, if there's any smell, it'll reduce that as well. Not that, well, it just smell like a sheep, I suppose. Just briefly, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we have on the phone Mike Lavin, who is the owner and designer of the products at European Sleepworks, and we're talking with him because he is one of the only people selling non-chemically treated products, furnishings, beddings, and furniture in the United States that I know of. Very few others. I've been on a search for stuff, so I've been looking long and hard all over the place, and so I know of where I speak. Flame retardants are used in couches, beds, and fabrics. Is there other, I mean, aside from the hard plastics and all the rest of it, are there other places where they're lurking that I've not mentioned?
I don't know if they're generally used in fabrics other than commercial fabrics. They would be in commercial fabrics. Like
yeah,
a hotel
couches and things.
Would be used for instance. My area of knowledge is restricted to things that are regulated by the California State Bureau of Home Furnishings, and I wouldn't be able to go beyond that.
Okay, well, why don't you bring us up to date on what they're demanding? Because according to, like I said, this National Geographic Green Guide, all this stuff is supposed to have been outlawed and not being used and everything. So what is going on here on the West Coast that's making it so that if a consumer like me calls around, I can't get anywhere near any products that don't have stuff in them? In fact, I couldn't even get my couch reupholstered by a reupholsterer using natural substances that were not flame retardant sprayed because he said it was illegal for him to do that. I finally did find someone, I won't mention her name in case it is illegal, but who said, oh, of course, I'm relieved to use this stuff. So, you know, it's forget about even buying a new couch without the stuff. I called everywhere. According to this green guide, IKEA is supposed to have stuff, and you had mentioned IKEA, and I called them, and I don't know whether I just talked to the wrong person, but they said, no, we use flame retardant on everything. So tell us what you know about what the regulations are saying these days.
It is interesting to me, and has been interesting for a number of years, that only one state in the United States has fire retardancy laws for cushioning material. Every few years, the state seems to push it up with more and more demands of what you put into it. And not one other state in the union has bothered to follow California's lead.
Wow.
So we can, I surmise they're not looking at any significant reductions in fire retardant deaths. Since the stuff works itself out, eventually, a sofa that's a few years old has, you know, less than an adequate amount of fire retardancy. I have contacted the state of California in person, the director. I went up to Sacramento, and I said, I think there's something happening. As you pushed up the latest level of fire retardancy, I'm seeing allergic reactions in children. Their response was, that what they're experiencing is some kind of a residual amount of who knows what in the polyurethane, and it couldn't possibly be the fire retardancy. In public meetings on fire retardancy for mattresses, there was this really impressive array of lobbyists from large industrial companies. It is my understanding that DuPont does about as much money in fire retardancy materials as the whole mattress industry combined. So you have an awful lot of built-in momentum pushing fire retardancy from a variety of different sources that just simply trump your show or my store. It just, there's so much more pressure to move in this direction.
So are you
generated by industry?
So what you're saying is that for now, if somebody who lives in California wants to buy a couch without fire retardant foam in it, all they have to do is travel to Portland or something, and they'll be able to get it there. Is that what?
No,
you're
it's
saying?
Not that simple.
No, I didn't think
the
so.
The foam plants are all in California, and so they make all the foams. They don't do, to my knowledge, special pouring of non-fire retardant foams. As you ship into California, you're shipping out of the you're shipping a SOPA into the Bay Area that could go, or Los Angeles, and because they ship up and down, they're going to go to one standard because the addition of the fire retardancy does not significantly increase the expense of the SOPA. So rather than making a sofa for Portland, Oregon, they're going to make it for the California and then ship to Portland, Oregon.
And of course, this is so nuts because California has always been in the forefront of sort of the clean air movement. And the other thing is that it appears to be something that's persisting to protect people who smoke. And there's less people smoking than there used to be, and it's sort of ironic that not only does secondhand smoke it's now considered a class one carcinogen. You know, there's all kinds of laws against smoking in public now anywhere, but we still have fire retardants all over our stuff, and we can't. I mean, people who don't smoke can't protect themselves from it because, as you say, in order for it to be sold in California, they're going to put it on everything, and I have to assume that if you're on an airplane, you're on a fire retardant seat with fake foam. God forbid there's, you know, if your seat burns in an airplane, I mean, it's the plastic. Anyway, let's not even go there. So basically what's happening is California is sort of ruling the roost, and now everybody's, you know, all this furniture, because the stuff that comes from China is just, you can't even make, you couldn't make up the smell from the, I mean, I went into a store that sold the absolutely beautifully designed Chinese couches and furnishings, and I was in the store for about 5 minutes and my eyes started to get red. I mean, the smell, you know, Jeffrey and I were just looking at each other like, whoa, you know, is really frightening. So, because they don't have rules in China about this yet. On the contrary, I think they think all the stuff is good. So we're looking at children being affected. We're looking at a combination of things being irritating to not only children but adults, and adults don't. Now, I said at the top of the show that I think that, and you, I think, believe this too, that a lot of people who are having trouble with breathing at night are doing that, and maybe we even posited that maybe sudden infant death is in part exposure to synthetic fabrics, to fire retardants, to God knows what else that's in some of these fabrics and the synthetic foams.
Yeah, that SIDS is one where I haven't come across research who would directly tie it, but doubtlessly you have. So
No, I haven't. I'm positing. I'm shooting off my mouth on the air, which people should just know. This is a thought process I've been going through. I just, when I look into toxins in fabrics and materials and stuff, there's this sense that people have that children, especially when they're lying on their back. I mean, on their anyway.
Yeah, on their stomach, the rebreathing of their
rebreathing.
The rebreathing has been associated with distinct possibilities. That's why they have children on their back. So they're definitely on their face breathing whatever, and including their own CO2. And that there has been distinct medical journal articles positing the possibility of that being a factor in SIDS.
And why don't you talk a bit about sleep apnea and what your feelings are about sleep apnea?
Well, this is if you start with sleep apnea or snoring in general, irritations to the upper airway are a significant factor. So if you're stuffed up, you've got asthma, you've got sinusitis, your chances of having both snoring and or sleep apnea are significantly increased. So then we go to things that cause childhood asthma, where the research is, and you start, which would be irritation to the upper airway, and then you're back into the polyurethanes, polyesters, dust mites, and formaldehyde. So these things have been really established as things that affect upper airway irritation. And again, those are things that if you have snoring, which is a precursor to sleep apnea, and can affect you cardiovascularly.
Big time.
Then eliminating irritants to the upper airway is the first step.
So, in addition to, I mean, there are companies selling bedding that's supposed to eliminate any chance of there being any dust mite poops anywhere. I think I can say poops on the air. The dust mite leavings, that's the irritant from the dust mites is what they leave behind. And there are companies making these things that are, I think, microbial, which it might be a bit disturbing. Is it the case that if you're using, again, latex, natural wool, blah, blah, that you're also eliminating a dust mite problem?
The first thing is that, I believe 2 years ago, a major study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that the dust mite covers, in fact, did not work. Hardly surprising, since they are moisture accumulators. The thing that works really well is dry heat. And if you can, for instance, what we did with our mattress was create a zipper removable top so you can put it in the dryer. But in general, if you can attack dust mites through dry heat as opposed to a chemical cover that just simply does not work, or has been shown not to work, that would be my first choice.
Yeah. One other thing that you and I were talking about is the issue of the increased amounts of cancer that we see in affluent areas, like Marin County has in California, has this enormous breast cancer epidemic. And one of the many things that they're exposed to is lots of new products of various sorts, including new plastics and new electronics and stuff. But they are also just in general exposed to more products. And you told me about a study where they show that East Germany had lower asthma until they started to become more affluent.
Yes. Polluted East Germany had a lower asthma rate than West Germany when they became more affluent, and probably better insulation, things like that, their asthma rates quickly climbed up to levels of West Germany. So asthma is highly connected. It's a disease of rich countries. Its prevalence rate in poor, in impoverished areas is significantly lower than it is in richer, affluent countries.
Yeah, I suppose, except, Jeffrey, isn't it also higher in... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there are asthma rates in for underserved populations tends to be higher, and the hypothesis is that has to do with urban exposures or lack of exposures to allergens that. That train the body to respond, so that rural folk, rural kids, have less asthma than urban kids.
Because they have more resistance because they're being exposed to.
They're exposed to microbes in soil. Fundamentally, what they found is that the immunoglobulins that are developed in response to asthma attacks are quite similar to those that are developed in response to parasites like roundworms. So lack of exposure early on fails to teach the immune system how to respond
yeah.
to that.
We're going to need to take just a brief musical break. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we have on the phone Mike Lavin from from European Sleepworks, and we're discussing non-toxic approaches to furnishings, home furnishings and sleeping things. We're going to take a brief musical break, and we'll be right back with you with the interview. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm Lena Berman, and we are on the phone today, both Jeff Fawcett and I, with Mike Lavin, L-A-V-I-N, who is the owner of European Sleepworks, and we are talking about furniture toxins. There's information about our July 1st appearance in Marin, our guests, the Progressive Health Observer, and a free stream of this week's show and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772, and the website for European Sleepworks is sleepworks.com, www.sleepworks.com. Mike Lavin. So we were just now talking about the children in urban areas. The other problem, of course, with people who are in populations at risk is that they're living on Superfund area, you know, in filthy, toxic neighborhoods often as well. But the interesting thing is the amount of asthma that occurs in affluent areas where they're exposed to more toxins. And I remember doing a show on indoor air pollution, and there was a piece of research that described the equivalent amount of cigarettes a child would have to smoke to get the same kind of toxic chemical exposure as climbing around on a new rug, you know, with glues and synthetic rugs and stuff. So it is a problem. Now, one of the things that is very difficult, as we said at the beginning of the show, is that when a consumer tries to purchase a product, they're given a lot of very misleading information, and I want to talk about that. And I also want you to describe that experience you had where you were talking to somebody and they started, you know, the cotton, the brominated cotton story.
So I was at a trade show the first year that the year before California was enacting the fire retardant scene, and there was every fire retardant chemical person in the world was there. And walking through the different booths, asking what's in it, everybody basically said it was a secret. And I went up to this one booth, and they had in some cotton with some polyester in it, and some weird color, and I asked him what it was, and he told me it was 100% cotton. I said, well, what's all of this other stuff that I'm looking at? In a very irritated voice, he said, well, the cotton's 100% cotton. So the idea that it's virtually impossible to get exactly full disclosure. No matter how hard you try, and if I can't get it, I can't see how even an extremely well-informed consumer could get it without access to the trades.
I can't. I mean, I'm a very well-educated consumer. I actually I got branded the crazy bamboo lady because I tried to purchase some wood flooring, and I was asking a lot of pointed questions about bamboo, and this is what I found out, just for people's information. Not all companies But most companies are buying bamboo from not very sustainable forests. They're cutting down forests and stuff. So there's some questions about the sustainability of it and where it's grown. It's grown in mostly in China. There's other a couple other countries who grow it. But there are supposed to be a few countries that are trying very hard to use... I mean, the thing that people don't realize about bamboo is that bamboo is glued together. So there's a whole question about what kind of glues you're using, how much formaldehyde they release. I had one salesperson from a company, a very large big box company who had a very good price, who claims to work directly with their Chinese factories on producing this stuff, and they have very high standards, and it's very eco-friendly, and they exceed all the standards for European even standards. But then I looked into that, and the European standards for glue still allow there to be outgassing of formaldehyde. So it's sort of like, how much formaldehyde would you like? You know, would you like a lot or a little? You know, this is a little. And they don't discuss the fact that when they bring wood in from China, I noticed a website that actually disclosed that they eliminate pests and molds, which means that they're fumigating the wood. And nobody would answer that question. Nobody would tell me what they're using, because there are I mean, there are ways of treating for pests that are not toxic, like using borates, using borax-like materials that are very benign, like I said, unless you eat it for breakfast. So, you know, I just could not get them to give me a straight answer. It looks as though the safest thing for people to put on their floors is solid hardwood, but indeed... some of the hardwood is being milled in China, and I still could not get answers to whether or not the stuff is fumigated or gassed with methyl bromide or something before it comes back into the country. Even companies who are not selling stuff that they self-consciously know to be milled in China still don't know, when I talked to them, tried to find out, but still didn't know whether the wood was fumigated or not. So for really sensitive people, I think pre-finished floors may have an advantage, even though you're pre-finishing with polyurethane. Again, it's a hard polyurethane finish that goes through a kiln drying, which is a heat drying. And Jeffrey, didn't you think that that would reduce or stop the reactivity of the material in the environment?
My understanding is the pulverization is there's some outgassing, but the polyurethane itself is problematic when it's pulverized. So if it is in a hard finish, it's just from wear and tear that you're going to create a dust.
An unknown there, I guess.
Yeah.
Mike, you also sell wood furniture, and you've been on you've had to look around to try to, what do you know about the woods and stuff like that?
I don't think I would worry about the wood. The bamboo I don't know anything about. But in order to get the wood in a position where it can be milled and stabilized, it has to go through a significant, what's called kiln drying. And it's completely dried out. And I bought a lot of wood in my lifetime, and pest in wood I can only think of one instance in my entire life where it was an issue. When it gets moist, then you have a whole different set of issues, but you can't really work it through a woodworking plant. The significant difference between the virtual elimination or near elimination of factories in North America is we had water-based finishes. So if you're in a water-based finish, you can be in the factory putting a finish on, and you can barely smell it. It's when you're using the formaldehyde base, which is a cheap solvent, then you have the outgassing from the finish, and you basically in the imports have absolutely nothing equivalent to EPA. There's nobody looking at what kind of solvents and what kind of finishes and how hard and how long they last. I mean, they come in a box, and nobody's paying any attention to it.
So if you are paying attention to it, what you can do is ask the store or the warehouse when you go to, if you have to go. First of all, based on what I'm learning from talking to people, I wouldn't suggest buying things from big box stores, even though their prices are very attractive. But if you do show up at the warehouse and have them open a box and put your nose in it, I don't know whether the smell test is entirely reliable, But my observation is that the solid woods, even treated with a pre-finish, do not have an odor. They smell like wood. They don't smell like plastic.
Well, I think it depends, again, as Mike said, what kind of finish they use. If it's in these formaldehyde or aldehyde-based solvents. I mean, basically what you have to do with any of the polyurethane is you have to put it in some kind of solvent so that you can apply it.
Yeah, so it dries.
And if they use these petrochemical-based solvents, you're going to smell them, and that's going to be the big
giveaway.
The big giveaway.
Yeah, the big giveaway. These
in general, if you can air things out.
Sure.
If you've got furniture that's new, and you can stick it in your garage for 3 or 4 months,
or in the sun,
I wouldn't necessarily do it in the sun.
Because it bleaches the wood, you mean?
Yes, you could get variations in finish real quick, especially on a new. But I mean, just aired out is a remarkable reduction in that smell test if it's accurate.
Yeah. But you also probably need to be careful also about. I mean, there's a lot of fiber board now being used in furniture. You know, they finish furniture off using fiber board instead of wood. I know that's not true in your products. Why don't we talk also about moisture problems? Let's go back to bedding and pillows. What I did notice in the studies that you showed me is that there's a huge problem, of course, and we know this, and I've done shows on mold, on mold exposure and asthma and allergic reactions and people's immune systems crashing. How do you prevent, I mean, latex is vulnerable to mold. How do you keep that from happening?
First, we use a thick cotton layer with a that has an interior filtering system of more cotton so that we've got moisture transport. Then wool has a natural ability to absorb moisture. It seeks to balance. It can hold up to 35% of its weight in moisture. It's resistant to water, but picks up will balance out humidity. Then we minimize the use of latex and create an extremely high porosity latex with holes, venting holes. And it's an open cell structure. We use minimal amounts. Then, and this is another byproduct of the fire retardancy thing. In order to pass the fire retardancy, they're seeking to get reduction in airflow in the mattresses so that the bottoms are non-permeable, the sides are near non-permeable. What we've done is completely opposite. We use the wool and the cotton everywhere, so it's completely surrounded. Everywhere, so that you're basically able to transport moisture. People sweat a minimum of an ounce an hour, and a couple could have a half gallon of water in a mattress in a night. So this transfer of moisture and the drying. Then again, as I mentioned before, we've got the removable cover, so you can put it in a dryer or put it out and air dry it, so that you can, if you are on the damp side, you've got some ability to air out and clean the mattress. But the interior mold structure of anything damp, no matter what it is not good.
Well, your beds are also, you also have beds that are slat beds so that people are not putting them on the floor or on a spring, you know, on a, what you call box spring. Your beds are on slats, which also gives you some aeration.
Yes.
Going back to the issue of going forward, you also sell spring mattresses that are also made with materials that are non-toxic. You know, you use the wool and all the same stuff, all the latex instead of foam and all the rest of the stuff, and again, no sprays. Spring mattresses tend to be cooler a little bit, but do the springs actually, is it true that the springs actually are more likely to conduct electromagnetic fields?
This is really controversial, and my research and people I've talked to make me believe that it is a non-issue. That being said, I get no shortage of bright people who consider it a major issue. and then they go to an all latex mattress.
Yeah. Okay.
And just personally, I think there's a billion things that go in front of it. Because we've got a background electromagnetic field just from the sun.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. Our guest is Mike Lavin, L-A-V-I-N, the owner of European Sleepworks. Their website, again, is sleepworks.com. The other thing that we talked about, and I don't want us to do anything that will get us into trouble with, you know, like I don't libelous sort of material on the air, but we discussed the fact that there are some very large companies selling futons, and that they claim, because I did this research, they claim to be making available to people futons that they will custom make without fire retardants, but they're very unclear about what it is that they use. They say, well, they use boric acid for, and then they say, no, not boric acid, borates, and then they're not clear about what they're, because, anyway. Why don't you talk about some of the slippery things that are being done with futons, because a lot of people need to be more aware of how to shop for a futon and be more safe. There's a lot of strange
stuff. Well, I'm not in the futon business.
But you know some stuff.
the fire retardancy, the new fire retardancy law, the old fire retardancy law was stick a cigarette, and if it didn't burn too big a hole, you were fine. The new fire retardancy laws are daunting. They take a Bunsen burner, two Bunsen burners, one top, one side, and they blast it whatever you've got for a full minute.
And so many people go to bed with a Bunsen burner. Have you noticed
right.
that?
Right, yes. Everybody does. and it doesn't test it with the bedding that you've got on. So if the bedding that you've got on it is on fire, it's just the mattress by itself. So all of the, you know, if you've got a polyester comforter, they're not testing the polyester comforter
really?
On top of it. Oh, no, it's just the mattress. This is making passing the fire retardancy test, which was not easy for futons originally, that much tougher. And that's about as far as I can go.
Well, you had mentioned that they some of the companies claim to be using organic cotton, and I mean, you don't want to talk about this on the air; it's fine. But you had said that buyer beware about what they're using in there.
We've got people claiming there's organic cotton. We've got people claiming there's organic latex. And you got sheets from China certified organic. There is, in fact, a very limited amount of organic cotton in the world. It carries a significant premium. There's more coming on stream, but there's not a lot of it out there. It carries a significant premium. And if you've got it, you should be able to have real certification.
So there's
a tiny amount of acreage actually available in the United States.
And so the industry standards are not, there's no standards, it
There's no
like.
Standards at all, and
yeah.
there's no enforcement.
It's like the building industry.
In other words, nobody's going and saying, you've got organic cotton, prove it to me. So anybody can say it. You've got organic latex, prove it to me.
Yeah.
There is nobody putting anybody on the carpet in the United States.
Yeah.
In Europe, in fact, there are strict standards. And when you say organic in Europe, there's usually somebody looking over your shoulder, making sure that you're not fudging too much.
Are the organic cotton certification through the same USDA board that does organics certification for foods? Is that the same process, or is there a different process that they use for certification?
I think that the United States one has an independent and honest group of people that are doing it, and it's extremely small.
Yeah, well, there's monkey business going on with the organics board now.
Okay,
it's a whole other issue. I was just curious whether it was the same group, because I know I'm familiar with that group, that board regarding foodstuffs. So I was just curious.
I don't think anybody is looking at the word organic in bedding or home products and holding anybody to their claims. There's nobody, no government or independent agency in the United States is doing anything that I'm aware of.
In addition, I mean, I have noticed that there are some companies that will admit, like one company admitted to me that they had a natural latex, well, they were, I heard that they had a natural latex mattress, and I contacted them, and that they, what they told me was that they still had some, but that they were moving toward a mattress that was a combination of synthetic and natural, which made me kind of go eek. But at least they told me, you know, it was that sort of thing. And I guess they were open to the idea of ordering the natural latex. It was one of those things where I really get the feeling that if the consumer starts to ask for something and they're willing to pay for it, that there'll be some changes. But what happens right now is that the consumer goes into the goes into a retail environment and gets told the strangest array of things. I had somebody tell me, well, the one thing that is heartening is there is a new high-density foam coming out that's supposed to be made without PBDEs. It's HR foam or high-resilient foam. Although, you know, I just wish they'd give up and start using latex because it's so much healthier. But anyway, this new polyfoam is supposedly coming out, which doesn't have it. And then there are some companies that are looking into, like Eddie Bauer and Crate and Barrel, I guess they're looking into alternatives, but they're still using PBDE-treated foam. So
it is my understanding that the technology exists that is only somewhat more expensive to make foams that pass fire retardancy test, and they are widely sold in Switzerland, Sweden, so that there's a variety of technologies that are just somewhat more expensive, the addition to the PBDEs being the low-cost alternative, and that's essentially why they exist. They don't have to be in the product.
Well, in fact, when you started selling foam mattresses back in the 70s, you were using a polyurethane foam, but it wasn't horrible. I mean, it didn't... I mean, I remember I had a little... sort of a high density. Well, I don't know if it was considered high density. It was a real firm polyfoam mattress when I was, you know, sleeping on a industrial pallet on the floor in Berkeley. And I don't ever remember a smell, and I think I would have noticed it if it had it. So it seems as though the products have gotten more toxic as time has gone on, along with the fire retardants. It also seems like the polyfoam has gotten more toxic.
I think some of that has to do with the raising agents. There have been definite changes dealing with the ozone level. What kind of raising agents? And as they've gone to alcohol-based raising agents, you've got a residual smell that didn't exist in the 70s. So it's one of those mixed bags. It's good for the environment, not necessarily good for another environment.
And lastly, you mentioned that the fire retardancy rules have gotten more stringent. Is there any sign of any change or reversal in any of this, or is it just moving on and getting worse, or is there any sense? I mean, I had heard rumors that they might be backing off on this, but it doesn't sound like it.
No. Now that they've federalized the fire retardancy rules, they are going to become more stringent than even California was. So the new federal test is more difficult to pass than the California test.
And so now there's going to be a federal rule that
rule, I believe, is going in the end of this year.
Oh boy!
So now it's definitely they took what California did and tried and said we're going to do it even more stringent. So we're going to look at a more stringent
dreadful.
Environment.
This is dreadful. So is that going to affect what you sell? Probably not, because you've sort of passed the test, huh?
To date, we've been able to pass their fire retardancy. It still continues to pass.
You know, the irony again here is that when firefighters have to go into a house where the products have fire retardant, you know, all the plastics and all of the, and the synthetics and everything, and that's burning. When that stuff burns, because eventually it does, you know, it may be retardant, but it burns eventually. That gas is the most toxic thing in the world. I mean, didn't you tell me, somebody told me that firefighters don't even want to go in to a building like that.
No, the fire marshals want to label furniture trucks with the trucks moving upholstered furniture as a hazardous material, because if it catches on fire, the outgassing of those. Just the fumes are extremely toxic. They knock you dead way before you get burnt to death.
Yeah, it's very ironic. Do you have any more amusing stories from the industry that you can share with us? Any other any funny little, like the story about the cotton, the cotton being organic?
I know. I wish I did, but you it's not a very funny subject, is it?
No, it isn't very funny. But those, but that is a really the things that these people will say, you know, to make you feel better. And that, and the main thing that I really wanted to get across with this show is that people have to be very cynical when they're buying products, because increasingly nobody will say anything, and there is a terrible disconnect between what's considered sustainable and what's non-toxic. There's no relationship between sustainable and non-toxic, because technically speaking, bamboo, no matter where it comes from, is sustainable, which is, if you start looking around on the internet, you start noticing that some sites are being critical, because apparently, you know, some of it's being grown in places that it isn't very sustainable. But it's, aside from that, the sustainability, people get mystified by these names. You know, it's green, it's sustainable. It has nothing to do with whether or not it has carcinogens in it. So people have to be very careful about it. I mean, I think that it's important for consumers to call companies, to look on their websites, to even call again to the corporate. Although what you find increasingly is when you try to call a corporate office for a large company, what you get is a person who takes orders. But I think if enough people are aggressive about trying to get the information, there may be more information available over time. You know, people just not buying unless they have more information. So, do you have any last words for consumers out there?
I have to be. This is not funny, but I was in a factory in Los Angeles, and they were making a so-called organic cotton mattress with springs. And they were right in front of me. They took two cans of solvents, just sprayed it on so that the cotton wouldn't move. It looks to me like the word organic and sustainable is going to produce no shortage of charlatanism. It's too easy to make claims and ask for more money. So something more on the European model, where you have testing laboratories and certifications like the German Ecotech certification, is going to be the only hope for consumers.
Yeah.
They're just not going to navigate by themselves.
That seems really true. Mike Lavin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us during
this
hour. Mike Lavin, L-A-V-I-N, from European Sleepworks. Sleepworks.com is the website. Thank you again. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, including our July 1st appearance in Marin, our guests, the Progressive Health Observer, a free stream of this week's show, and lots, lots more at www.yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.